This episode of The North Remembers is brought to you by Minute with Mary. Listen, if you've got eyes and eyelashes and you want those lashes to be amazing, I'm not joking, guys. You need to head on over to minutewithmary.com and get yourself the new 4D Epic Mascara. You won't be sorry. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The North Remembers. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Game of Thrones on HBO. So sit back and relax because winter's here. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. My name's Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I am in shock and awe about all the hot takes that have been flying around about Game of Thrones series finale, The Iron Throne. I am just shocked. Well, I'm not shocked because, you know, I went through the whole Lost experience, so I know how, you know, dark and full of terrors the internet can be.
Amen.
But man, the hot takes, the hot take police was in full force. And I think we know, you know what we need to do?
What?
We need to have like a take intervention. That's what I feel like we need to do.
Tell me more.
Because I feel like people are take bunkered in their little bunker, and they won't come out, and they're just stuck to it. The people hate it, people love it, and it's just, man, like, can we all just take a step back and just appreciate the show for what it is and as a whole, and what the finale accomplished, mm-hmm. at least? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, you know, it's funny because, of course, you and I enjoyed the episode.
Yes.
And yeah, there's just been so much out there, whether it's blogs, podcasts, posts, you name it. It has been the hot topic this week. And there have been a few that have caught my eye. Some of them I just see it and I'm like, ugh, just add another one to the pile of just being disgruntled without having really depth to it, if that makes
right,
sense. Just
right.
Saying like, I hated it. Okay, well, why did you hate it? And, you know, you and I talked about how both of our dads who don't watch the show, like, asked us about it. And so it's been interesting as the week has gone on to really dig into those, I don't know, into, as I said, those particularly blogs, I would say, that have been able
yeah.
to pick it apart in a way that I can agree with.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that, you know, whoever doesn't like it is wrong. You know, we're not right for liking it or, you know, being okay with it. Again, it was a competent finale. Could it have been better? Absolutely. It could have been.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the internet, you know, aside from being dark and full of terrors, is also a massive echo chamber. And for people that are reading these blogs or listening, and, you know, instead of watching the show or feeling out for themselves, for a lot of people, what they like or don't like, they go straight to a podcast, or they go straight to a blog and they're like, tell me what I should like and what I shouldn't like. And then as soon as they get that information, then they report that out into the world. And then other people get informed by that. And then people go on to, you know, Rotten Tomatoes and put their ratings on there. And just, it's one giant echo chamber. And it's hard for me to accept that sometimes. I really feel like Lost got this kind of treatment as well. I absolutely know half of the people that watched the Lost finale just
do tell.
Didn't understand it. And not because they're dumb, but because they thought they all died. Like, that they were dead the whole time. And, like, that's not me. That's fact. Not opinion, right? Like,
okay.
Half the people thought they were dead the whole time, and that's what they took out of it. When, of course, that wasn't the case. But because they thought, well, they were dead the whole time, they were stupid, it's just an uninformed opinion, you know? And I feel like Game of Thrones is getting that treatment because it didn't meet everyone's expectations.
It was too rushed. It was too rushed. It needed a little bit more time to breathe to help other people calm themselves because they had
yeah.
expectations. I mean, heck, this was already like a long series. This was season 8. We expected major plot points
yeah.
to be given the
well,
breath that they were given in the past.
I mean, was it season 8? Yes, technically, but with the amount of... See, I like looking at it in terms of hours of entertainment. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got 73 hours worth of entertainment, right?
Okay.
And according to the rubric that was established by the show in the first 6 seasons, we got essentially, 10 episodes per season. We mm-hmm. got essentially 7 seasons and 3 episodes.
Okay.
That's what we got. So I'd like looking at it in terms of hours. So could we have gotten, like 3 or 4 more hours worth of entertainment to round it out? I would say, yeah, we probably could have. And before we get into all the listener feedback, I would like to talk about one thing that I feel like, as I've taken some time here, we're actually obviously a couple of days late with this listener feedback episode. So thank you, everybody for, being patient with that. But we kind of did that by design because we wanted to take some time and get all of your feedback and listen and think and ruminate on the finale. And one of the things that I came up with where I feel like after sleeping on it, the show kind of missed an opportunity was that moment when John hands himself over. And we have Grey Worm there. We have the Unsullied there. How does all that go down?
Yeah.
That would provide some...
Once again, he could have easily just said, she went out for a bite.
Right. But, I mean, she wouldn't have... he wouldn't have done that. So it's that inevitable thing of... How did all that go down, right? How did John surrender? What happened with Grey Worm? Did he freak out? Did he beat the hell out of John? Did anything could have happened, right? And there's that little bit of tension, and I would have loved to have seen like the race for Jon Snow, mm-hmm. like Grey Worm finding out that he killed Daenerys, and then all of a sudden someone like Davos finding out that he killed Daenerys, and both of them running to Jon Snow for different reasons.
Yep.
And it would have been this time bomb of, okay, what's going to happen to Jon Snow? And then also, I would have loved that moment of Sansa finding out that Jon, and Arya finding out too, that Jon was imprisoned by the people of King's Landing. And there would have been that great moment, and it would have really been symmetrical. It really would have mirrored the first season when Rob went down to King's Landing or was going down to King's Landing to go break out Ned. And would Sansa have done the same exact thing? Would she have gone from Winterfell down to King's Landing to break out Jon?
Oh, yeah, because one of the difficult things that now that we've had some time to breathe is how quickly this forum of people just show up. We don't know how they were contacted, how they right. came to be. And we don't get to see, any of the reactions. It's just like fade to black, fade in. Here's Tyrion walking out, and there's everybody we know who's still alive.
Yeah, and the question here too is it absolutely necessary to see all those things? Is the important part that they're there? That's the most important part. Is the important part that Jon ended up in jail, or that Tyrion was imprisoned? Are those what we need to take out of it? Because is it worth telling the other stories, or is it just we have to accept those things and move on with what the story gave us, right? Mm. I contend that we probably would have been better off seeing some of those reactions. And that's why I say if we got like 2 or 3 more hours worth of the show, we probably would have been a little bit better off. Like if you consider the first half of the finale to be the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones, where it ends with Jon killing Dany, and the next episode begins with the race to Jon, and seeing all the reactions and finding out, okay, what are we doing here, right? We would have had a great penultimate episode, that gray area of Dany maybe being queen, of like trying to figure that out. Is she really a good queen? And then we finally have that moment with Jon where he realizes, and we all as an audience realize, yeah, she's not the person we thought she was going to be. And at the end, it ends with Jon killing her.
And the Iron Throne melting?
And yeah, in the Iron Throne melting. That would have been a really cool penultimate episode, right?
Yeah. I just, like so many, sit here scratching my head saying, why was it only 6 episodes?
Yeah. I wish I had an answer for that.
Right.
You know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, the Double D's, they only did six episodes because they just decided they wanted to quit and they wanted to move on to Star Wars. And that's what they did.
Well, that's foolish.
That's garbage because this is their life's work, right? They've spent in 10 years, 11 years developing this TV show and all of a sudden they're going to toss it in. That's obviously not true.
Agreed.
And more importantly, the deal with Star Wars wasn't signed until recently. So they didn't just, throw in the towel because they decided, screw it, I'm moving on to Star Wars. No, that was a fairly recent thing. So the writing and all the production for the show had already been done. When they signed the deal, they were in the editing bay. It had already all been completed. So, that's kind of garbage to say that.
But it makes it even worse, because at least then you can point your fingers and be like, oh, it's because they want to hurry up and get ready for Star Wars, which exactly would have been rude. It would have been a terrible waste of, quickening something up that they've worked on for so long. But then we're just left there with a why. We're all sitting here scratching our heads the same way we were when Bran was chosen as king. Why?
Yeah, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, right? Because in my opinion, they've earned it. They've given us 7.3 amazing episode seasons of television. I mean, really, seasons of television that are far beyond the capability of really any other showrunner. Mm-hmm. The most popular show in all of the world, really. One that united countries and people across the globe.
Yes.
For one night, everybody sat down and watched Game of Thrones. You're never going to see that again. So these guys all of a sudden just throwing the towel in?
We will see it again.
I don't know. I don't know. What kind of show has that kind of zeitgeist
pull
right
now? It's not on right now, but I'm saying we'll see it again.
It'll be interesting.
We will see it again.
I really hope so. I love that idea. And another thing I've been hearing too is after the books, D&D, they just didn't... They didn't have the writing chops to follow up with GRRM's writing.
Yep.
And I find that garbage too.
Oh, well, that's where I'm kind of at, where I'm like, you were great while you had George. And then it just changed a little bit.
Would it have helped? Yeah, of course it would have, but it's garbage because they're the ones that have to adapt the show to begin with.
I don't think it's garbage.
They have to adapt the book.
You can't say, yes, it would have helped, and then say it's garbage.
No, I mean, well, of course it would have helped, but the fact to say that, to totally dismiss their writing ability is garbage. And I say that because, there's this thing where, if George had just written the books, it would have been fine. But implicit in that comment is the fact that George has finished the books, which he has not. And he's been writing the same effing book since 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about how much he's struggling with it. And you can only imagine why. I mean, we talked with on Outlander Cast, our other podcast. Go check it out, outlandercast.com. Shameless plug. We talked with Diana Gabaldone, who was the author of Outlander. And she actually lives in Arizona, and she lives in the same city as George Martin, and they're buddies, and they hang out, they drink coffee together at the same coffee shop. And in our interview with her, she said, we asked her, Diana, have you ever written yourself into a corner? Have you ever gotten yourself in a bind where you're like, I can't get out of this? And she said, no, I never do, because all I do is just change the paint, and I paint myself, I get myself out of it. She said, but George R. R. Martin, however, has talked to me multiple times saying, listen, Diana, I'm in a spot here. I don't know what to do. And when you have that knowledge and you look at it like, if George R. R. Martin is struggling with where he is going in his books, with all of the people, all of the religions, all of the storylines, all of the arcs, you got to look at what Dave and Dan did and say, wow, they actually took that whole story and condensed it down for television and told a coherent story, right?
Mm-hmm.
They took it from a place that George is struggling and actually managed to land the plane.
Yeah.
And George Martin can't yet. So you can only imagine how hard that must have been. So for them to actually take that story and make it a coherent story, I give them tons of credit. I really do.
I know. And as I've said, I've enjoyed it. But I can see to some degree how people are upset.
I agree. I think there are things that the show was missing. But you know what? Enough of us. It is now time for the rest of the listener feedback. Marvin, are you ready to get into the last listener feedback episode?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Well, it's not the last. Oh, yeah. We'll do one more after that.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. You're 100% right. All right, here we go.
Jumping on in and starting things off, we've got Hector Lugo, who wrote on YouTube, "I laughed, I cried, dithering from all the feels, to not knowing what to feel, yet grateful for this undeniable monumental television achievement that we all shared." Now, Brandon the Broken Reins, who is the three-eyed raven as well. So everyone better check themselves because he has the tea on everybody and everything. Little brother is watching. "I loved this show for 8 years, and I enjoyed the satisfying final episode, but I beseech writer George R. R. Martin to complete his masterpiece sooner than later. Until then, who knew that a CGI dragon could reduce me to tears?" I agree, Hector. Props to the CGI'd animals in the last episode.
Yes.
P.S. Thank you for continuing to get us through Droughtlander with insight and humor. I love the t-shirts.
Oh, well, you are welcome. We are happy to provide that kind of entertainment. And I, too, beseech George R. R. Martin to take his frickin' vitamins. Just take your vitamins, dude, and sit down and keep writing. D. Miller says on YouTube, "I agree that the show has a brand problem. From what they've presented, why should he be the king? Also, if Tyrion were still being held prisoner after Dany is dead and he's brought to the gathering of the leaders, why is he the one who gets to propose who should be king? Maybe he steps up to make sure that Edmure doesn't become king by default." Ugh. "Tyrion's reason veers very close to what happens in modern-day politics. Not who's the best person for the job, but who has the best story." Mm. Very, very, very salient thought right there, D. Miller. Very salient thought.
You know whose story was not good?
Who?
Edmure's. Remember that time when I just let...
I was a prisoner.
Jaime Lannister in?
He, like, convinced me to, like... just open the gates.
I remember when I couldn't shoot the arrow at all. And everyone watched me. That stunk. Sketchy Trails said, "Best of awards, Game of Thrones, seasons 6, 4, 3. Best episode, Hard Home. Best acting, tie between Peter Dinklage and Emilia Clarke." Sketchy Trails says that Peter Dinklage for the full series and Emilia Clarke for the later seasons. Mm-hmm. "Best character arc is for Jaime. Greatest character growth is for Sansa. And most interesting role, Tyrion, as he was the only character that had interactions and scenes with all of the major characters throughout the series, North, South, and East. Enigma Award tie between Bran and the Night King. Weakest season was 8. Should have been the best. I blame HBO and D&D. Clearly D&D should have stepped out when their interest waned, as Ron Moore did with Outlander. HBO should have hired new showrunners to finish up the series properly after season 6. I am sure there would be plenty of experienced writers that would have loved to have taken up this project. Yet there might be a different beat with a new writing team, but better than to rush the finish when we got puzzle pieces that didn't exactly mesh. That being said, Game of Thrones is still my favorite TV show of all time. I'm not sure why so many people feel that a weaker episodes here at the end have erased some of the best television ever produced. We live too much in the moment and forget too quickly about the past. I cannot agree more with Sketchy Trails. I feel like people are feeling like Game of Thrones is a swear word right now. Like,
a little bit, yeah.
You can't even, it's ruined it for me. Well, you know what, honey? Calm down.
Chill out.
You know, it's okay.
Do some yoga.
You know, you just had a bad day.
Well, Sketchy Trails here actually says two things that are completely opposite of each other, where they were like, listen, where he says, or he or she says, chill out. This is a great television series. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But they also say they should have fired D&D after season 6 and got new showrunners. And that's a little out there for me.
Why?
Because why in God's name, after coming after the incredible season 6, would HBO say to their showrunners, who have guided this show for six amazing seasons to be like, hey, you're out. Sorry, we don't want anybody. We don't want you here anymore. I feel like that's a little out there for me.
Okay, all right, I got you.
Crystal Lyle says, number one, I'm sure Jaime was pardoned, Mary, by Robert Baratheon, especially around the time that Robert Baratheon agreed to marry Cersei, and that's why he was still on the Kingsguard.
Okay.
Just remember you asked that question. Number two, I thought it was heartbreaking listening to Dany in the last scene. She sounded as charming as ever without any understanding that she may have burnt King's Landing just a wee bit too much.
You know, and, like when you like cook a marshmallow and you're like, oh yeah, okay, this is good. You know, I still see a little bit that's undercooked.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, the whole thing's up in flames. That's what happened to Daenerys. She was like, I'm going to burn the Golden Company. I'm going to knock down the walls.
I got a little bit left here.
Got a little bit left. And then
The marshmallow's
ruined.
Turned to brick.
You just watch it fall into the fire.
While all of her moments of ruthlessness in the past were against evil forces, she was in the big game now, like Tyrion had said towards the end of season 6, and it was more terrifying than ever. Number three, if Dany had burned King's Landing just the right amount, wouldn't there be even more cries of too much fan service? And the final episode would have been too happy, unless they cut to 9 months or more later, and Dany is having the child many predicted that she would have with Jon, and she died in childbirth like so many other poor women in Westeros. Number four, I'm happy that Arya lived. Jon got to live with Ghost north of the Wall. Brienne became commander of the Kingsguard, and that the Night King was defeated. Perhaps getting what I wanted meant getting less of a show. And number five, there is so much you can argue that the show lacked from season 5 onwards, but I think the show over the course of 8 seasons is an incredible achievement. Acting, music, cinematography, all the details, all the embroidery, all the Easter eggs from the books, all the action, all the twists, all the YouTube channels, all the discussion, all the theorizing. There are so few shows and movies and franchises and epic stories that end in a satisfying manner, and it makes the achievement of Avengers Endgame all the greater.
Oh.
Absolutely 100% agree with you. End this one, Chris.
Lily Mac said, nice insight, guys. I agree that the ending made sense, although I had lots of issues with how we got there. And first off, Edmund Tully being disrespected by Sansa and then everyone kind of smirking about it. He was a war veteran. He was held for prison. Wait, he was held for years by prison by the Freeze. Oh, you know what? He was.
He's a dink.
No, but for years.
As much as I love Tobias Menzies,
yeah,
he was a doofus.
His wedding night
as Edmure
was one of the most infamous multiple murders ever. Why shouldn't he be considered? He was more qualified than Bran, who could have sat on his small council. Ooh, interesting. Bran being king, in my opinion, was one of the "this is how it ends" bullets given to D&D by George R. Martin. Was Gurm's, let's just like
Gurm,
make that
yep.
a word. It was his ego, writers are the wisest, know the most, make the best decisions, etc. And third point, I hate it how they made Jon's character lesser and boring. And Arya inexplicably important to the point where Jon had very few lines. And his acting seems to be all silent, long looks. I found myself missing the Night King. Nothing about Jon's arc in this episode made sense. Killing a Khaleesi means Jon was their new Khal. Or why didn't Grey Worm just kill him? He hated Jon and was sworn to protect her. Making Jon a prisoner made no sense. None.
And this kind of goes into what we were theorizing earlier in this episode. There is a bit of reaction there that I think as viewers, we've kind of deserved. Like, remember how we said if Jon kills Dany, that's one of those things that you kind of have to talk about?
Yeah.
You can't just let that slide by.
Yeah.
You need to talk about that, and you need to know the process of how things happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. It'd be like when Oswald shot Kennedy, and all of a sudden he just died. Oh wait, he did just die, and you didn't get to know anything about it. But still, like it's not satisfying if there is nothing there. To talk about, like, I don't know. It's just one of those things that you got to talk about, in my opinion.
Okay.
On Facebook, Emma Champion says, I hate that Jon's heritage ended up meaning nothing, but he ended up right where he wanted to be. Would you agree with this statement, my darling?
I think it meant a lot because it's what riled Daenerys up. Like, it was just like one last straw, because I really do. I think that if John didn't know, if Daenerys didn't know, I think they would have ended up a nice little happy couple, and he would have been her yin to her yang, because for the most part, her crazy hadn't come out yet. But once yes. she knew that John was a Targaryen and she felt threatened and unloved, had they been happy-go-lucky, I think
like
all
dragon
would have been
riding.
Well. Yeah. It been like the Disney dragon riding scene, I do think that this would have been a very different ending.
Right. And once Jorah had died and she lost that human connection, mm-hmm. and John wasn't able to give her that connection. And I think that's partially as a result of him finding out that she was technically his aunt.
Yeah, gross.
I still feel like he was kind of weirded out by that.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't he be? I think it's a fair thing to say.
Well, it reminds me of like when you have a tear in your clothing, your a piece of paper, your skin, I don't know. Like, if there's a tear, it's never going back, right?
Right. It's never going to be the same.
Listen, it's just going to keep getting worse.
The die has been cast.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened when John's parentage came to light. So, in fact, I would say that
you can thank Bran.
I would say that John's parentage is probably one of the main cruxes of the entire season. That's like the fulcrum upon this whole the season upon which this season balanced was John's parentage.
It's what broke Dany.
Yes.
It's what broke her to having no connections left in this world.
Yes. All right. Melissa Mazza says this season spent more time checking off plot points and less evoking emotion, which I think could have made this season and this ending much more impactful. One of the Merry and Blake commandments is character always informs plot. Plot never should never inform character. And I think there's an argument to be made that the plot demanded a few things this season, mm-hmm. and they put characters in the positions to fulfill that plot. Would you agree with that, or would you disagree with that?
I mean, I felt like some episodes did a good job.
A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms was one of them where...
That was the second one?
Yeah.
Yeah, where everyone was hanging out, having yeah. sex, drinking goat's giant's milk.
Yes.
Yeah. Loved that episode.
Talking about giant titties.
Love it. Yeah. And then even with Squinterfell, I was down with Squinterfell for a large part of it.
Sure.
I felt like there was still a lot of, I felt very emotional. I was nervous as heck. But I would agree that other episodes lacked a little bit of emotion.
Right.
Elizabeth.
Isel?
I hope so. Says, I look forward to George R. R. Martin's delivering on prophecies. The show seems to have forgotten them completely. So the show had addressed only like one.
Well,
right?
they addressed Maggie the Frog's prophecy.
Yes.
They addressed...
the Lord of Light's chosen person.
Yeah, like the prince that was promised. They addressed it, but they weren't fully...
Who the heck was it?
Engaged like they were in the book.
Yes. So we have no idea who the prince or princess who was promised was.
No, I think you're left to assume it was either Arya or Jon. And if I were to... The way that it's... Again, because remember, the books and the show are separate, right? So the show only went in as far as to say the prince that was promised is the one that will end the darkness. Now, that's a pretty vague thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, Arya killing the Night King, is that ending darkness? Yeah. I mean, quite literally, that episode ends with the sun rising and the Night King being dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Melisandre, being the servant of the Lord of Light, giving her life over to the Lord of Light. So that means the light has triumphed. But there is an argument to be made here that Jon is the one who ends the darkness.
The darkness being the dark heart of Daenerys.
Right. I think there's an argument to be made there.
No matter what, it's not clear. And the Lord of Light was pretty clear with all these red priestesses, priests and priestesses all this time.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a little confusing.
All right, Melissa Carolyn says, I feel like we are giving the writers too much credit with the Bran is evil and has a master plan theory.
Oh, yeah, I'm not giving the writers that credit. I'm just saying we all know the truth about Bran.
Yeah, it feels that way. like the way that it was written, you can surmise these things, but I don't think that's actually canon. You know what I mean?
No.
Kendra Spin Classic says, what is the Night's Watch actually guarding, and how did they rebuild a 700-foot ice wall so fast, and why wasn't Jon immediately killed by Grey Worm?
So I don't think the Night's Watch is guarding anything except chillin'. Straight chillin', man.
Yes.
And then the 700-foot ice wall, I thought that was only broken near Eastwatch.
That's right.
And
it was only broken near Eastwatch. By Castle Black, it was fully intact.
Yeah. So they're just, once again, chilling. Ba-dum-bum-tang. But the fact that Jon wasn't immediately killed by Grey Worm is the mystery.
That is a mystery that
is
gone.
Cue Sarah McLachlan. Okay? Where is she?
Or cue The Leftovers. Let the mystery be.
Yeah, we don't want to let the mystery be. You all know, we all saw the angel of death that is Grey Worm.
Yes, we did.
There's no way he would have let Jon walk down those stairs.
There's no way he would have let John go unscathed. Something would have
happened.
Could
he have said, like, what's the word they say in Pirates of the Caribbean? Parlay?
Parlay. Yeah.
Could he have said it like...
Parlay! Parlay!
Yeah, that's what happened.
Don't want to get my ass kicked.
So I saw Keira Knightley do this. I know what to say.
And that's, again, the thing that we are missing. It would have been really awesome to see this race for Jon Snow. Like, to see what would have happened.
He could have climbed on that stupid white horse that we didn't see in this episode.
That's possible. Certainly.
Why did Arya get off of her horse?
That's another thing that kind of goes unanswered here. Like, Arya was running out of King's Landing.
On a horse.
And then all of a sudden, she's back.
Probably the Dothraki zombie that came back from the dead took it back from her and said, that's mine.
Jennifer Katz says, two dragons. The acting was amazing as always, but the rest... I don't expect to get the exact ending I want, nor want everything to be just like the books. But come on, Bran, I've got to go now, Stark as king. Bunch of jabronis.
Ooh, nice word. Nice word. I dig it.
And Lynn Henderson says, wow, what a finale. I give it 4.8 dragons. Mm. Game of Thrones doing what Game of Thrones does best, flipping the script and doing the unexpected. Never thought I would have been having so many feels over Jaime and Cersei's death, but damn, that Peter Dinklage did it to me. He's been absolutely on fire this season, pun intended. And I honestly didn't think John could bring himself to kill Dany. He has never been very good at separating love from duty. And Bran becoming king, I didn't see that one coming, but I can get behind it. I can see him being one to rule by committee and allowing his council to have greater control. And in regards to what he knew and what he did not share, I'm reminded of Doctor Strange in the MCU. Perhaps just saying something would have changed the course of events. And as bad as it got, this was the way that history was meant to play out. That being said, I really want to know what he told Tyrion in the conversation that they had when they were talking about their stories.
Yeah, was he like, so we're totally going to all live.
Yeah.
And then I need you, when we have this random council of people, to nominate me for king.
But I was excited to see Tobias Menzies as Edmure grace my screen once again. I spent the last two seasons wondering if Arya forgot to free him when she killed Walder Frey and the clan. And then there's Robin, I'm hungry mother, Arryn, pulling a long bottom on us.
Schlong bottom.
Oh, you know what? Just
you're a wizard, Harry.
There you go. But where was Meera Reed? I would have loved to have seen her on the small council, although apparently her father Howland was there. Rumor has it that he was one of the seated between Sam and Edmure.
I thought Meera died.
No, Meera didn't die.
Where the heck
her
has
brother
she been?
Died. Her brother
I know
died.
Her brother died. I've just expected she's been dead.
Odd choice considering that we
no,
don't really have
hold
any.
Hold up, seriously. What happened to Meera?
She was gone. She left.
When?
She left in season 7. She was gone.
Where'd she go?
I don't know where she went. She
was
went
she
where
still
Gendry
up
went.
North?
She went where Gendry went when he was rowing the
boat to nowhere.
The boat to nowhere. I would have loved to seen her on the small council, although her father howled, blah blah blah. Also, where was he during the Battle of Winterfell? Meaning Sam, and we have a Prince of Dorne, but what happened to Ilaria? Ilaria died. She was down in the dungeons where Cersei kept her and made her watch her daughter die. Yeah. So I'm sure
the poisonous kiss.
Yeah, I'm sure that Ellaria was probably alive, and I'm sure that she probably died in the dungeons when the whole thing collapsed in on the dungeons. I mean, if you could take the time to include Bronn, why not Mira and Ellaria? And so many questions, but then again, we have to come to expect that from Game of Thrones. By the way, next week is going to be the big one. The Game of Thrones documentary is set to air on Sunday at 9 p.m., and then Tuesday, the Outlander Blu-ray drops. So I have a couple of thoughts on future podcasts. First, can we get an Outlander cast on the Blu-rays? And second, what Game of Thrones spinoffs would you like to see? Mary?
Listen, man, I am researching Mira Reed right now.
You're still on the Mira thing.
I found out what happened.
Okay, what happened? Okay?
So she and Bran, you know, they're doing everything. The freaking three-eyed raven, Hodor, hold the door happens. Everyone's running amok. Everything's happening. So then they get back to the Night's Watch, you know? Great time leaving the Night's Watch just to go up to this tree to turn into a three-eyed raven and then coming back and lose Hodor all the way and Chojin. Anyway, so they get back to the Night's Watch and Bran's like, watch out guys, winter's coming. And Bran and Mira go back to Winterfell, and then Bran gives a nice little, you know, hi to Sansa, and then Mira comes in and she's like, man, White Walkers are coming. I need to go hang out with my family. And then Bran's like, thank you. And Mira's like, what the hell's wrong with you, man? Summer, Hodor, Chojin, everyone died. For you, Bran. And Bran's like, I'm no longer Bran Stark. So where the heck is Greywater Watch? Did she live? Did she get killed along the way?
I don't know.
Like,
it's one of those grand mysteries.
I'm going to find it. I hope she wasn't like eaten.
Well, for me, the Game of Thrones spinoffs that I would like to see, one is that we're getting, obviously, where it's happening, is the one with written by Jane Goldman. We've talked about it before, where it's tens of thousands of years before this current story. I kind of like that idea. Getting a story that is so far off from our current story that we simply don't know how it's going to turn out.
There's a Google map of Westeros.
Oh, that's cool. And a lot of people have said, oh, I would love to see Robert Baratheon's rebellion and how Sir Barristan and Sir Arthur Dayne and all these people had...
They were cool. Don't worry, guys. They were in the Neck, which... Like, the north, it's really big, and then it skimmies on down past White Harbor, past a couple other things, past the Three Sisters. Does any of this make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. Blue Water Bay, whatever that is, you know, that bay thing that everyone cares about?
Yep.
It's, like, horizontal to that.
Okay.
So it was further south.
All right.
It was much further south than Winterfell, and, you know, they were safe. Mira should be safe.
Is it north of King's Landing?
Yes.
Okay.
It is still north of King's Landing.
So, you know, and one of those things, it's like that has prequel syndrome to get like that rebellion because you know exactly how it ends up. It's the Star Wars prequel syndrome. You know exactly how, you know, Star Wars ends up, like A New Hope.
Yeah, and you just don't care.
You're just pointing yourself in that direction. Give me a story with the same DNA. Like if I were to get a prequel or some kind of spinoff, I would like it to follow the vein of Prometheus and Alien, where you tell a story that has the same DNA and you tell a story that's, you know, either parallel or tangential to it, but has just as much of effect in a way that you don't know.
Well, I hope it's not as boring as the latest Star Wars movie with Han Solo.
I didn't mind
Solo. You know
who's
pointless in my mind? Huh. Amelia Clark's character. Because, oh no, she's bad. But you know, she's not bad enough to make an impact on the galaxy.
No, she's not, but she works for a guy, spoiler alert, that does have an impact on the galaxy.
Yeah, I just don't care about her. And it's like they leave, and it's like, oh no, Amelia Clark once again was good until the last scene, and then you're like, she's bad. We should have known. That's what D&D did. They didn't know how to end this series, and they watched Solo, and
they were like, oh,
you know, really cool. As if we do the same thing with Amelia Clark. Make her like a love interest, have everyone dig her, and then it's like, parting scene. She's bad.
All right, just so everybody is clear, they had already written season 8 by the time Solo was being shot.
Let's hope.
Okay, so just so we don't spread that crap rumor that they based season 8 on Solo. All right, so we got some emails here. One from Erin. She says, thank you for taking me off the ledge about the most recent episode. We don't agree on everything, but what was interesting is that you used some of the exact same arguments to defend the episode that I've actually been using to criticize it. Specifically, we are on the same page that Dany's torching of King's Landing was absolutely believable and even foretold for the careful watcher and reader. Where we disagreed for a while was whether or not she needed to go Mad Queen and for us to get there. But that can be another conversation for another day. Where your argument finally landed with me was when you neared the end of your podcast episode and I tried to help us all better understand her state of mind. Haven't I done things I later regretted and when I was depressed, felt completely alone, or, God forbid, hangry? Haven't I hurt people when in that mental state? Haven't I made bad decisions that caused me to question my morality and integrity? And as much as I hate to admit it, yep, I sure have.
Seriously, man.
And what I did after emerging from those moments was try to learn and be a better person than who I was when I fell short. And because I knew it would be difficult to achieve that by will alone, I made changes in my life. I reinforced the structures that propped up the person I wanted to be, and I tore down those enabled the person I didn't want to be. And when I realized I couldn't smoke cigarettes and also play ice hockey, I signed up for another league. And when I hurt someone because I didn't take the time out I needed to prevent myself from lashing out in the heat of the moment, I began keeping a mental list of tasks that pretty much always needed doing. Cutting the lawn, doing the dishes, taking out the recycling, calling my sister, etc. So I would have reason to pause the conversation and release some pressure before reacting. I'm not suggesting that Dany is anything like me, but it's possible she's looking for a fail-proof way to never, ever unleash that kind of destruction on humanity again. I like that.
Yes.
Good job. Good job.
You know, John tried. John tried with her. Oh, Dany. She just needed a Snickers. Kathy wrote in and said, first, I think the audience would have been much better served by splitting the last 3 episodes in half and giving us 6 55-minute episodes instead. This would have helped the Jamie Brand relationship and Dany's being alone and choosing my way or the highway dictatorship. It would have allowed us as the audience to have a week to grieve, rejoice, speculate, and even give us the illusion of time, even if the episodes were still full and packed. But for this episode, I give 4.6 dragons. My good everything with Drogon. It was beautiful and touching and what a lot of the audience wanted with the direwolves. My bad is a tie for 2 things. We are going to break the wheel with a king whose moniker is The Broken. Not thrilled with that name. My real bad is how much time passed in the last half of the episode. How long was Jon Snow in prison? The small council room and keep are apparently completely repaired. The city is bustling and full of people again, and it takes that long to send Jon Snow to the wall, and we are still trying to find the dragon who should not have been seen in at least a year? I seriously need a timestamp 1 year later on some of that. My great is how Tolkien asked the ending was. Joris has always said that he was influenced by Tolkien, and you can see that in the ending of the series. You have Jon playing the role of Frodo and leaving the realms of men with the wildling elves. Sansa playing the role of Aragorn and revives a long-lost monarchy and rules justly and fairly. Arya becoming the dual rose of Legolas and Gimli and explores the entirety of the known and unknown world. And Bran is Samwise, wisely rules the King's Landing Shire. Unfortunately, this leaves the role of Saruman for Dany, who is defeated after attacking the innocent hobbits in the Shire. All in all, I thought this was an appropriate ending and was well foreshadowed, but suffered from the desire to fit in the 6 episodes instead of giving the story the room that it needed.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent thoughts. I mean, that's really good. I mean, I always thought that this was like Lord of the Rings-esque, but having all those characters put to names, I really like that a lot. All right, this one comes from Erica. She says, my thoughts seem to be different than most people out there. I don't feel that Tyrion, Jon, and Varys betrayed Daenerys. I feel that she betrayed them and the realm. I understand why Daenerys went mad and she left what was her true home, where she was raised and loved, to go to the place where was supposed to be her home. She put her dreams to the side to help the North and ended up losing the closest person to her. Mm-hmm. And in time, she lost her dream, which was John's secret, and her friends and family along the way. Mm-hmm. Varys did what he promised her he would do. If he saw that she was going down the wrong path, he would tell her. And she ignored his advice and then killed him because he moved forward to protect the realm for her. And she and Tyrion had discussed multiple times how she should not be the Queen of Ashes. And he turned in Varys as a sign that he was by her side and gave her a way out and to be the queen the realm deserved. Instead, when she could have flown to the Red Keep and finished Cersei and taken the throne as peacefully as war allows. And I don't feel that Jon betrayed her because he told his family the truth. These are the people at the end of the day that he grew up with. These are his younger siblings that he most likely saw be born and loved. Mm-hmm. He saw what war has done to his sisters and what they have done to survive. And it's not going to put this new person in front of them. Mm. And what Tyrion said in the finale was correct. We saw her turn fire and blood so many times over the years. But most of us were okay with that because they were not great people. But it was her default to kill people, not to try and come to the most peaceful ending possible. Mm. You know, one of the things too that I keep replaying in my head is when John and Danny are talking and Danny says to John, the world we need can't be loyal to the men who are already in this world. And it's such a beautiful line. It's something similar to that.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful line, and it's one of those underplayed lines. I don't think that got enough attention in this episode. Because she's right. The world we need can't be loyal to the people who are already in this world. Like, who already have propped it up and made it the way that it needed, the way that it was. Mm-hmm. So like having Edmure stand up to be king is the exact wrong answer.
Correct.
Because he was part of that world. So when she says those things, that's why someone like Bran has to be king, because thematically it makes sense. The way that she did it was incorrect, but the ideal is the right one, I feel like.
And it could have been her.
Could have been.
If she didn't snap and burn everybody.
Right.
Let me just take a deep breath on that. Jessica in Chicago writes, so I'm going to kick it back all the way to season 7 and how simply allowing 10 episodes per season could have prevented the awesome disappointment of the end of this series. Imagine this. The end of season 7 was the first 3 episodes from season 8. We end on the Night King death. Everyone has time and space to accept that Arya's arc was leading to this and Jon was instrumental in orchestrating it. Then, when season 8 starts, we are given more time with Jon and Daenerys, maybe a wedding, and time to create the tension between Sansa and Daenerys that was so contrived in the current version. This would allow us to see that Jon is truly struggling between his two selves, wolf and dragon. We'd see this through the comparison of Sansa and Dany and how they rule. Now the audience could adjust to the idea that Dany may be in the wrong with her methodology. We'd also get an opportunity to see Cersei as the final big bad she was, again, contrived to be... Lena Headey was relegated to staring out in the distance, which is such a waste of her talents. It truly was. I mean, she's a great just like facial actress, and you did get to see that evolved, but I understand. If we had been given enough time with these characters and not been blasted by a mid-season endgame battle that turned out to be inconsequential. Wow. What's wrong with my mouth? Overall, the fan reaction could be more uniform. It goes without saying that Bran as king is hard to swallow on both sides, but I think we could have gotten there easier had we been gambling with a bigger pot. Maybe we do see Bran orchestrating a bit more, like you said, more gray area. We still don't know what the heck Bran was doing during the Night King battle. That's something that could have been explored via flashbacks, explaining lore and wrapping up things that way. We simply needed higher stakes. End of. It's not the destination. It's the journey of how we ended up here. Had we been given 10 episodes in each of these seasons, I guarantee the wing factor, is that how I say it? Whinge?
Sure.
I don't even know what that means.
Like wing it? Wing?
Who knows? Okay. Factor would be relegated to just the hardcore book fans who are never going to be happy. Rightly so, the books are wonderful. But instead, we were given a money-motivated rush job because the showrunners didn't have the foresight or flippantly?
That a girl.
There we go. Arrogant enough to think they could wrap up this story in the manner they did. This is ultimately a disservice to the cast, the crew, and post-production teams who busted their asses, save for the water bottles and coffee cups left on the shots, to make beautiful lemonade out of D&D's lemon oven ending. You can't act CGI or beautifully score your way out of plot holes, contrivances, and cringeworthy writing. There will always be complaints about the show's treatment of people of color, of women in power, and its stance on democracy, which I personally wish was the discourse focus around the show. But instead, we're discussing the actual execution of one of the most expensive productions ever. The writing should have been pristine. Breaking Bad, The Leftovers. And if D&D couldn't devote the time to writing and producing the end of the series in the manner that deserved, because maybe they wanted that Disney Star Wars money, they should have passed the baton on to qualified staff writers like Brian Cogman, who could have gotten us there. Wrapping it up. I like to compare these two seasons to having sex. At least one party can totally get there by pumping six times. But it's better for both parties if the time and energy is spent toward building the eventual climax. Thank you for attending my Game of Thrones TED Talk. Thank you, Mary and Blake, for being so positive, but not dummies who just swallow anything because Clegane Bowl throughout the season. You definitely helped me temper my dissatisfaction within the episodes and look forward to for the good things. Ultimately, I'm not happy with it, but I'm not wanting to send flaming dog turds to the D&D either. It is what it is. My watch has ended, and can't wait for Outlander podcast.
Well, you are welcome, and this is why Jess from Chicago is a Mary and Blake Hall of Fame listener.
True.
I always give her the outstandings in Outlander, and she is full, you know, she deserves one here as well. But
you're not going to play it?
Well, you know what? Fine. In fact, I think Jess had a streak in Outlander for, I think it was like 10 weeks in a row where she got an outstanding. And then suddenly the 11th week she didn't get one. So I feel bad for that. This one comes from Janine. She says, "Hey, Mary and Blake, I give that Game of Thrones finale 4 out of 5 dragons. I liked it, but it also felt a little anticlimactic for me. And here's what I liked. The shot that took my breath away was when Dany was walking to address her people and Drogon opened his wings behind her. It reminded me of the movie Maleficent with Angelina Jolie. What a shot to show that Dany has gone full dragon. I also loved that Dany got close to the throne just as she did in the House of the Undying, but only got to touch it for a second. She never did get to sit on it, which the Undying scene seemed to foreshadow. And it makes me think of the C.S. Lewis quote, "Of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive." And that's why Dany had to die. Once Dany and Jon started kissing, I 100% knew he was going to stab her. And I loved the mirroring of how she died in Jon's arms, just as Ygritte did, which I totally called, by the way. And here are the things that brought this down for me, one dragon. One question I had is, why did Drogon melt the Iron Throne? In most folklore, they make dragons out to be super intelligent, but that's not exactly a stance this show has taken before. So why do you think Drogon made the connection between Dany's death in the Iron Throne? Mary, what do you think? Because I'm kind of on board with Drogon knowing that it was the Iron Throne. I mean, I think he knew that Jon Snow killed her, but just something tells me that Drogon knew that was the thing.
Yeah. I mean, because Drogon obviously could have been like, oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed, and just like thrown fire everywhere, but it was specifically at the Iron Throne.
Yeah, it was.
And this being like the mother of dragons, maybe she would just like pet Drogon and whisper, "One day, my precious, the Iron Throne will be mine." Like, I feel like Drogon had to listen to Daenerys talk about that dang throne. Yes. So much that he's like, this was the issue.
Yep.
Stupid throne, yep. Precious.
From that point, I think that the episode felt rather rushed, kind of like a let's tie up these loose ends and get out of here. Yes, I would agree with you on that one. We still have no idea what in the world Bran was doing during the Battle of Winterfell, and after he said, I've got to go now, did he just want a drone's eye view of the battle? But hey, now he's the king. That was definitely surprising, but not doesn't make enough sense. And Mary, do you think that Bran has proved himself useful enough?
No.
Neither do I. I think he's a disaster. He didn't do a damn thing. I did love that Jon got sent to the Night's Watch by Grey Worm, who wasn't even staying in Westeros. Sure, he wanted justice, but your queen was Cray. At least Jon had his Frodo moment at the end and got to retire with his wolf in the True North. Props to the showrunners for letting him pet Ghost. He is the goodest boy. I would have loved to have seen a little bit of a time jump to see if the new kingdom under Bran would be successful, but maybe that will be one of the spinoff TV shows. To clear that up immediately, they are not doing a sequel to Game of Thrones.
Correct.
They are not. They are doing prequels or spinoffs, but they are not doing a sequel. That story is now, in the eyes of HBO, has ended.
Their watch has ended.
Yes. And all in all, though, I love the Stark walk at the end of that follow Jon, Sansa, and Arya. I love that Sansa became queen in the North after all the crap she'd lived through, and that Arya got a super awesome ship with a direwolf on the front. I just still had some questions left over and wish that Jon being a Targaryen had a bit more of an impact on the storyline. I still think it had a ton of impact on the storyline. I'm not going to lie.
All right. Keelan writes in and gave this episode 4.5 dragons. It was completely fine by me. Sort of saw Bran on the throne, or really as king, since there's no throne anymore. I liked Drogon's revenge and melting it away. Thought that was fitting, too. Here's a thought, though. Based on the number of lines Bran had in this episode and this season as a whole, what is it like two lines with 10 words in it each? Hold on.
Oh, she's saying, what is it, like two lines with 10 words each?
Okay, just curious what his pay grade is compared to all the rest. Heck, I think even Podrick had more lines this season than with the Jenny song. I think Bran is like a euphonium or tuba player in the orchestra. For every note they might play, they get like 10 times the salary as that of the violinist who plays everything. Right, Mary? Well, as a low musician myself, I often play along with the euphonium or tuba. We lay it down. Without us, Erebi would just be flying around.
Oh my God. This is such a band dork.
Okay, still, I think Bran is king or whatever elected official he is now is a fitting end. P.S. They better install some handicap ramps and some elevators to get Bran moving around. At least his reign will make the kingdom completely ADA compliant. You know, when you think about the old Red Keep with that spiral staircase
he can't get
Cersei,
up and down.
He can't.
Oh, that's funny.
ADA he needs compliant. The little, like, you know those staircase wheelchair seats that go around? Yeah. Fitting end for Sansa and Arya. Maybe not too exciting, but appropriate. Though towards the end, I kept getting lost in all the Lord of the Rings references. Sam writing here and back again. I mean, the Song of Ice and Fire. And especially with Arya heading off on a ship into the West. I could not get Annie Lennox's song out of my head. Hoping she'll meet up with Frodo and Gandalf. Ultimately, though, I'm a romantic at heart and so wish Gendry could have gone along with her. And poor Jon. He's got no one now. Well, at least he has Ghost. Thanks, Mary and Blake, for entertaining us and keeping us company for the past 6 weeks. It has been a fun journey.
This one comes from Jill. She says, Mary and Blake, first let me say thank you for doing the North Remembers podcast. Thank you for keeping it so positive while discussing what has happened all season. I really enjoyed this last episode, and I felt very satisfied with where everyone ended up. Do you think Bran will be the king for the next 1,000 years or so, since the last Three-Eyed Raven was over 1,000 years old? You know, that's a good question. That's a really good question. You know, part of me thinks the Three-Eyed Raven lived 1,000 years because he was stuck in the magical tree. And there's
Bran will just build a new tree. He loves trees.
He's all about the tree life.
Yeah.
But I just wonder if the magic of the tree is what kept the Three-Eyed Raven alive.
I thought the tree was as he was ending his life. I don't know. Did that guy ever walk around?
I'm sure that he did at some point. He had to be born and walk into the tree at one point.
I don't even know, man.
He didn't come out as... He wasn't Groot. I am Three-Eyed Raven. ready for the voicemails?
I sure am.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Brittany from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Brittany.
I'm really glad I listened to your podcast. I was giving this a solid 3. I'm going to bump it up to a solid 4. Your positivity rubbed off a little bit.
Thank you.
My good was the acting. Everybody did incredible. I mean, Amelia, without even saying anything on that dragon, just snapping. It was just stunning. My bad was the Cersei and Jaime scene. I love their acting. Lena and Nikolai are spectacular and their chemistry. I love it. I knew it was coming. I feel like it just needed a little bit more time to breathe. I don't really like the message that they're sending with Jaime, that no matter how much you try to change, you can't, you always go back. You can't fight fate. I really don't love that idea. So like I said, I knew it was coming, but I'm struggling. My great was just Miguel. The whole episode, I mean, when we were in the streets with Arya and Jon, I was getting like, I don't know if I was supposed to be reminded of 9/11, but I was. And it was just getting the view of the person in the rubble, not people necessarily fighting for their lives, but like the innocence. It was, I've never experienced that before. And that last shot with Arya walking to the horse, it was beautiful.
Well, Brittany, obviously, she was talking about episode 5 in this one, mm-hmm. and Miguel Sapochnik, the way that he directed and so on. Actually, Brittany, they in fact did make parallels to 9/11 when shooting this.
Really?
I didn't know that. And the battle of the firebombing of Dresden. When they were planning it out and they were trying to figure out visually how they were going to make it, they modeled it on those two things.
Wow.
So you were right to feel that way. Mm-hmm. That was the point.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Dorothy calling from France, Paris, to be exact.
Wow.
First-time caller. I wanted to say that this episode, the series finale of Game of Thrones, was such an utter disappointment. I think it would have been better if it had ended once Dany died, but then they just kept on going, and it was just really a letdown. I wish they would have taken their time to produce something a little better. I wish that they would have had a better pacing. I think this is a really great series, but the end, that wasn't it. Anyway, thanks. Bye.
Well, Dorothy, thank you for calling in all the way from Paris, France,
yes.
of all places. Welcome, welcome. You know, your reasoning and what you believe, I think, is totally rational and reasonable. Could they have taken more time? Sure. We got what we got. And I think if we take a step back and we look at it as a whole, I think you'll be happier with the end result as opposed to just looking at it as on an episode-per-episode basis.
Hello from the Highlands of Scotland. It's Kirsten Lang here giving you my take on the episode. The Good. He's always been my favourite wee man, Tyrion. He may be nicknamed the Imp, but what a giant of a character he's become. Peter Dinklage is a Goliath of an actor, who particularly shines in dialogue-driven scenes. And who better to bring poetic justice between the Starks and the Lannisters? He gets them working together for the realm, after years of it being the lion versus the wolf. The bad? What's stuck in my craw? Brienne writing in the Kingsguard book.
Wow.
Then closing it while the ink was still wet. Now it's going to look like a toddler wrote it with her fingers, you diddy. The Great. Drogon taking a dislike to Dany's office chair. That entire scene was tense and heartfelt. I haven't greeted that much over an animated character since Simba's dad died. Ultimately, the entire show is The Great. In the years to come, it will be the yardstick by which the TV shows are measured. It had a real-world impact and gave us contradictory characters to love and hate through a spectrum of emotional layers. In the end, those characters became something they were all best at, and hopefully it creates a better world for them. Cheerio, as now my watch has ended.
Thanks, Kirsten. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. You know, I've had a chance to go back and watch and listen to that whole interaction between John and Dany.
Mm-hmm. So sad.
It's so beautifully written, in my opinion. I find that so beautiful. The way that it was acted, the way that it was written, it really felt real to me. It felt like an honest. It felt like an honest moment between the two.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a moment, in my opinion, that was earned.
Agreed.
And I think if you look at it from that perspective, you're gonna be much happier with this episode. Anybody that is displeased with the episode, I think if you just stand back and look at it from that perspective, mm-hmm. like that moment was earned, the rest of it kind of falls into place. That is it, though, my darling. That's the end of the voicemails.
Wow.
We didn't get many voicemails. We got more emails this week,
okay.
Oddly enough. I think people just had too many things
to
say.
They were, like, overwhelmed with their emotions.
Yes. Yes, I would agree. So that does it for this episode. Are you ready to close it out?
I am.
All right, let's do it.
We want to thank you guys once again so much for hanging out with us these past several weeks. And yes, we are going to be having at least two more episodes. One, our reactions based upon the documentary, which we do believe is coming out Sunday.
Yes.
And then a listener feedback based upon that. And then who knows, we might have a couple more here or there. But we do have some other things coming down the pipeline.
Yes, we do. We have some more Outlander Cast episodes coming. So go to OutlanderCast.com or even MaryandBlake.com to catch those episodes. If you are interested in watching Outlander and you're not already a fan, I recommend the show. It's a good show. You can watch it on Stars. It's actually coming on Netflix, the first two seasons.
So excited about that.
For those American listeners there, you can catch Outlander on Netflix starting, I think, May 27th, as a matter of fact.
Oh my gosh.
So it's coming very soon.
Oh my gosh.
And then listen to us at OutlanderCast. We will also be having some more shows of This Is Us 2 coming up later on in the fall,
mm-hmm.
Because This Is Us will be coming back at that point. We are discussing a Watchmen podcast. We're discussing it. I'm not sure if we're actually going to go ahead and go through with it, but it's a discussion. If you want us to do it, please let us know. We also, and the big one that's coming up, it's our next project.
There you go.
I've been getting hyped up for is our Hamilton podcast.
Yes.
That will be called Rise Up. And if you want to listen to it, you can. However, it will be only for Outlander Cast patrons. So
how can you be one if you don't listen to Outlander Cast and you're not an Outlander
If you're not
Cast
an Outlander fan and you don't listen to Outlander Cast, that's okay.
Don't worry.
Don't worry about it. You can still get the Rise Up podcast. Just become a patron of Outlander Cast. Just go to OutlanderCastClan.com and sign up for the level 5 number. And
the Klansman.
The Klansman number.
I got you.
And you will be able to access Rise Up. So don't worry about Outlander. Don't worry about spoilers. Don't worry about any of that, because you're not going to get any of it. You'll just be directed right to Rise Up.
That's right.
Any other projects we got coming up, Marvin?
Summer.
Yeah.
Summertime.
Summer. Summer with our kids.
Summertime with our kids. You know, that whole thing right there, being parents. Well, guys and gals, once again, thank you so much. Please feel free to share this podcast. You know, it is short, sweet. A lot of people are probably rewatching the final season. And for now, I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
And the North remembers.